Now we come to chapter 6. And this man Solomon here is actually going to have a great prayer of dedication, but he's also going to deliver a message before his prayer. And it's a tremendous message, by the way. I want you to listen to it. Then said Solomon, "The Lord has said that he would dwell in the thick darkness. But I built an house of habitation for thee, and a place for thy dwelling forever." And the king turned his face and blessed the whole congregation of Israel. And all the congregation of Israel stood. And he said, "Blessed be the Lord God of Israel, who hath with his hands fulfilled that which he spake with his mouth to my father David, saying." You see that all of this goes back to David. David is the one responsible for the temple. He says, "Since the day that I brought forth my people out of the land of Egypt, I chose no city among all the tribes of Israel to build a house in, that my name might be there. Neither chose I any man to be a ruler over my people Israel. But I have chosen Jerusalem, that my name might be there. And I have chosen David to be over my people Israel." Now, this is the sovereign will of God. God has chosen Jerusalem to be the center and the capital of this earth. It will be someday. He chose it for the place for the temple to be built. And he chose David to be the king, and now one in David's line. This is the arbitrary, the absolute will of God in making this choice. Now, I want to be very frank with you today, very candid. I would not choose Jerusalem. Very frankly, I think the most beautiful spot in that land is where old Ahab and Jezebel lived, up at Samaria, up on top of that lovely mountain, and it's not hemmed in on any side. A lot of people build up on a hillside, and they have a view of a valley, but they don't look every direction. Now, in Samaria, you could look in every direction. You look to the west, you see the Mediterranean Sea. You look to the east, you see the Jordan Valley, the Sea of Galilee. You look to the south, you see Jerusalem. You look to the north, you see Mount Hermon. Now, my friend, that's quite a view. I would choose that place. But you want to know something. I think I ought to let you in on it. God never asked me about it at all. This is the sovereign will of God. He says here, "I have chosen Jerusalem, that my name might be there. And I have chosen David to be over my people Israel." Now, this is something we need to recognize. Now, God has his will for you and me. I actually believe that for a child of God today, that God has a place for you to live, has a house for you to live in. He has all of those things. Now, the great problem is for you and me to get in the will of God. You and I can stand off and argue about free will and the election, the sovereign grace of God, God's sovereignty, all you want to. We won't get anywhere. And it's rather, I think, fruitless to waste your time on that argument. I'll tell you something that is very profitable. Is for you and me to get into the place, and I want to put it a little more specific, in the spot that is marked X of God for you and me. And when you and I get on that spot, we're going to be in the right place. That is the thing that is important. God chose Jerusalem, and God chose this man David. Now, will you notice verse 7? "Now it was in the heart of David my father to build a house for the name of the Lord God of Israel." Now, all that Solomon is saying here, I've done what David wanted done. I've merely carried out the wishes and will of David in building this. And now, will you notice here the 11th verse? "And in it have I put the ark," speaking of the temple, "wherein is the covenant of the Lord, that he made with the children of Israel. This is all important to see here. Now you have this wonderful prayer of dedication of Solomon here, and we read, and he stood before the altar of the Lord in the presence of all the congregation of Israel and spread forth his hands. For Solomon had made a brazen scaffold of 5 cubits long, 5 cubits broad, 3 cubits high, had set it in the midst of the court, and upon it he stood and kneeled down upon his knees before all the congregation of Israel and spread forth his hands toward heaven. There's always been an argument about the proper posture of prayer. Should you kneel or stand up or get down on your face? Bow down on all fours. How should you get? Well, we're told here Solomon kneeled down. You're looking for a posture? Well, certainly there's nothing wrong with this. And now notice what he does now, for this is a great prayer of thanksgiving. And he said, O Lord God of Israel, there is no God like thee in the heaven nor in the earth, which keepeth covenant and showeth mercy unto thy servants that walk before thee with all their hearts. Thou which hast kept with thy servant David my father that which thou hast promised him, and speakest with thy mouth, and hast fulfilled it with thine hand as it is this day. Now, he's coming to thank God because he is the Creator, and he's done something. He's moved into the heart and life of Solomon, he had of David, and he had into the life of the nation. That is something that today a great many folk need is an experience with God. Somehow or another are satisfied to stand off and stiff-arm the Lord and keep him over there and say, yes, I'm a Christian, and this sort of thing. But why not, my friend, come to him directly, come to him definitely, come to him in a real relationship. Now, again, in this prayer of dedication, he comes back in verse 18, but will God in very deed dwell with men on the earth? The whole heaven and the heaven of heavens cannot contain thee, how much less this house which I have built. Now, you'll notice that he thanks the Lord here, first of all, for material things, and he had, I think, probably more material things than any man on top side of this earth. But the things that he had, like gold and silver, we're going to see over in the 9th chapter, he had it in such abundance it was commonplace, like going out and picking up pebbles on the seashore. And he never had to look at the price tag on anything, and economy was not in the vocabulary of that man at all. But in spite of all that Solomon had, the average American today has more things and more stuff and more material than Solomon ever had. He has more comforts, more devices, more gadgets, more buttons to push, things that are functional and utilitarian. Solomon never had air conditioning, central heating, electric cooking, electric blankets and toasters. Solomon had ice drinks in summertime because he sent a crew to the top of Mount Hermon to get the ice and snow up there. The average American, though, can wander into the kitchen, open the ice box, and have it in a few seconds, all the ice cubes he wants. Solomon had fresh meat all the time, but he couldn't keep it in deep freeze. Had a retinue of servants, was slaying animals, and of course he had quite a few people at his table. They probably would consume an entire carcass at one time. An army was busy bringing foodstuffs from all over the earth. The navy was bringing costly and delectable morsels for the taste of the most fastidious gourmet. Now, them average American can go into a supermarket, push a cart down aisles where there are mountains of foodstuffs, and they've been brought from the four corners of the world. And he can get them packaged or canned, get it in cellophane, get it in box. He can get it most anyway. The shelves groaning with goods from everywhere. And when he goes by the cash register, why, even the cash register, though, groans today. There is something, may I say, that this man utters a great prayer, thanksgiving to God for providing so many things. I wonder how many of us thank God for the provision that He makes for us around us today in so many ways. I do not know about you. I thank God for the privilege of living in this day and generation, not just for the material things, but, my friend, because of the spiritual things and the glorious opportunities today. Solomon had this prayer of dedication and this message he gave, and it got out finally to the then-known world. But he never could go on radio, nor could he go on television at all. Now, will you notice in this prayer, there's several things we'd like to call attention to. Verse 21, "Hearken therefore unto the supplications of thy servants and of thy people Israel, which they've made toward this place. Hear thou from thy dwelling place, even from heaven." Verse 22, "If a man sin against his neighbor, and an oath be laid upon him to make him swear, and the oath come before thine altar in this house, then hear thou from heaven." See, that temple was to become the very center of the life of the nation Israel. Verse 24, "And if thy people Israel be put to the worse before the enemy, because they've sinned against thee," if they've come back to the temple, you see. Verse 26, "When the heaven is shut up, there's no rain, what are they to do? Come to God in prayer." Verse 28, "If there be dearth in the land, if there be pestilence, if there be blasting, what are they to do? To come to the temple, come to God in prayer." Verse 30, "Then hear thou from heaven thy dwelling place, and forgive and render unto every man according to all his ways, whose heart thou knowest, for thou only knowest the hearts of the children of men." God knows us, friends. That's the reason we ought to be doing business with Him. Verse 32, "Moreover, concerning the stranger, which is not of thy people Israel, but is come from a far country, for thy great name's sake, and thy mighty hand, and thy stretched out arm, if they come and pray in this house, then hear thou from heaven, even from thy dwelling place, and do according to all that the stranger calleth to thee for, that all the people of the earth may know thy name, and fear thee as doth thy people Israel, and may know this house that I have built is called by thy name." You see, this was a great missionary project. The world was to come here. This was not just for Israel. But if the stranger come from the end of the earth, come from a far country, then he was to hear. Verse 36, "If they sin against thee, for there's no man that sinneth not, thou be angry with them and deliver them over to their enemies." Why, again, what are they to do? Well, in the country that they have been taken, why, they are to lift their voices to God and turn toward this temple. Turn in that direction, though it even be destroyed. And that's what Daniel did, you will recall. And you read now, and I think probably I should put in here, verse 38, "If they return to thee with all their heart, with all their soul, in the land of their captivity, where they have carried them captives, and pray toward their land, which thou gavest unto their fathers, toward the city which thou hast chosen, and toward the house which I have built for thy name, then hear thou from heaven, even from thy dwelling place, their prayer and their supplication, and maintain their cause, and forgive thy people which have sinned against thee. Now, my God, let, I beseech thee, thine eyes be open. Let thine ears be attent unto the prayer that is made in this place. Now, therefore, arise, O Lord God, into thy resting place, thou in the ark of thy strength. Let thy priests, O Lord God, be clothed with salvation, and let thy saints rejoice in goodness. O Lord God, turn not away the face of thine anointed. Remember the mercies of David, thy servant." And I say this is a glorious prayer. And he makes it on the basis of his mercies that he's extended to David. Now, you and I are to pray, not on the mercies, but because Christ has made a mercy seat for us to come to today by his shed blood. We have mercy today. And he made peace for us by the blood of his cross. God is prepared to extend mercy to us. Now, this brings us here to the conclusion of the prayer of Solomon, and now we are going to see that the glory of the Lord will fill this house as it had the tabernacle. Now, though it was inferior in many ways, and yet rich and ornate, yet it was inferior to the tabernacle. But God, in His mercy, He accepts it and blesses these people. And over a period of time, He did bless them. And we're going to see now, as we leave this part, we're going to see the final days of the reign of Solomon. And actually, the thing that God's going to emphasize is His tremendous missionary work. Solomon was a great missionary. People came from the ends of the earth when they heard of his wisdom. And that, of course, was spiritual wisdom that God had given him. I don't think he exercised too much sense in other directions.